listening to the Supernova podcast from Joffrey Street Productions, featuring the hosts of the Cool Shot on the Tube podcast.
Richard Taylor and his partner Tanya Roger began what would become Weta Workshop Limited 16 years ago. Their first job was providing caricatured puppets for a satire show. In the years that followed, they worked with Peter Jackson on Meet the Feebles, Brain Dead, Forgotten Silver, Heavenly Creatures and The Frighteners. Weta has since worked on Hercules and Xena series, Master and Commander, iRobot, Van Helsing, The Last Samurai, Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, The Legend of Zorro, and most recently, King Kong. And of course, the Lord of the Rings trilogy, for which Weta provided the design, fabrication and on-set operation of the creatures, special makeup effects and prosthetics, miniatures, armour and weaponry, as well as a heap of digital work too. They have received 5 BAFTAs and 6 Academy Awards to date. The following was recorded on the Supernova preview night, Friday, the 14th of October, 2005.
So I do apologise for repeating myself, but I've only lived one life, so in turn I've only got one thing to talk about, but we'll give it a crack. So trying to discover where Weta started, I look at our showreel and it sometimes takes me by surprise that we're here 17 years after we started the business, having got that body of work behind us. My wife and I grew up in rural New Zealand. I grew up in a little place called Tihihi, which is literally an intersection in a main road. Had 14 families growing up in that district. And my wife grew up on the east coast of New Zealand. She was the only European in a completely Māori school. So that's equivalent potentially to growing up in Australia in a fairly remote part of the country. But we met when we were 13 on holiday, and at 15 years old we decided we would set up a workshop one day. We didn't know about the film industry, we didn't know that that's what we'd end up be doing, but we really, really wanted to make things with our hands. I'd been digging the mud out of a creek on the back of our farm, trying to teach myself how to sculpt. My parents are engineers, and in no way could they see their son becoming an artist as such, and they were very concerned for me, only slightly offset by the fact I'd managed to find a girlfriend. But it caused them no end of grief that I was going to end up throwing my life away and become an artist. It's funny, jumping forward years later, that the magic of television, the first job I ever did was this really crude, very, very low budget shoe sale for a local shoe store. And I made these trumpets, probably worth $15, that the actors played on. But it was like a god ray came out of the sky and hit my dad in his lazy boy chair, because there was his son's work on television. And now today he's Richard Taylor's dad, which is a complete reversal on the heartache that I got early up. But Tanya and I did finally move to Wellington. We set up a little workshop, not really appreciating who we were going to work for. We worked in the back room of a flat, and it was about half the size of the stage here. And we didn't know what a client was particularly. We started finding materials in jumbo bins and skips around the city. And for the first year and a half to 2 years, that's really where we supplied most of the materials to the jobs we were doing. But we slowly started to be known for the work we were doing. We got our first big break when we were about 2 years into our business, when we ultimately won a contract to produce 72 puppets for a New Zealand version of Spitting Image. You guys had that wonderful show, Rubbery Figures, I think, or something like that, Rubbery Faces, whatever it was. And we likewise did our own show. We had been getting a good round meal once a week by sculpting buffet sculptures in margarine at a local hotel. And because of that experience, I went on and sculpted all 72 puppets for public eye out of margarine, and in fact continued to work with that material, not knowing what plasticine or commercially available clay was for many years into our career. All of Heavenly Creatures was sculpted in margarine. the characters for that. But finally, we met a gentleman called Howard Berger from KMB Effects Workshop. He came down on the first season of Hercules and Xena. And suddenly our eyes were opened to the fact there were other people across the world doing just the same stuff as we were and much, much better than we were. And suddenly there was this whole community opened up to us. So for the first 5 to 7 years, we were working pretty much in isolation, just making it up as we went along. About 4 years into our work, we heard about this crazy guy up the coast called Peter Jackson that was making this really wacky zombie space movie out of his alien space movie out of his parents' basement. And he got invited to come and visit a TV commercial that Tanya and I were working on. And this disheveled young guy wandered in and he was sort of all wide-eyed. And I remember the very moment I saw him, And I went up and just introduced myself. I was very, very quiet back then and quite shy, but for some reason I just knew that this was someone that Tanya and I could relate to. And then pretty much from that minute onwards, maybe 3 or 4 times a week, for the next 5 or 6 years, we'd spend time in each other's company in the evenings, talking about films, talking about things that we could do, planning movies, talking about King Kong all those years ago, how one day we'd want to make King Kong. And in us, he found 2 young people that were driven by a passion to make stuff, creative stuff with their hands. And in him, we found an amazing individual that could challenge us with the prospects of what we could do. And then we made Meet the Feebles. So our first experience working with Peter was on Meet the Feebles. But it was I still remember that as truly my most favourite experience in the film industry, really, because it's the first thing we ever did. Everyone was paid exactly the same sum of money, from the producer down to the runner. So there was a real equality in the crew. We were working in an old railway shed, and it was flea-ridden, pigeon-filled. It was the most ghastly place. But for some reason, it just added this heightened level of maverick guerrilla filmmaking. The whole movie was made for $750,000. We did 100 puppets. We built and shot for 6 months with a tiny crew, but it was such an amazing atmosphere. And that really secured for us the knowledge that we wanted to continue on with Peter. The height of Meet the Feebles was a particular scene where Mr. Bletch, if some of you remember, gets the guppy stuck in his back tooth. And the poor old guppy ultimately causes Mr. Bletch to vomit the guppy back up on the golf course. And my wife looked after all of the bodily fluids that were required on the movie. And she had built this wonderful rig built inside a 44-gallon drum. So out of all the slops from the caterer each day, she'd keep all the stuff because we didn't have the money to go out and buy the material. So she slowly filled this big 44-gallon drum up of the lunchtime slops. So she had this wonderful mix of stuff. And there's Mr. Bletch with the actor inside the suit, hand in the head, ready to go for the scene. And Peter's almost drooling. He's so excited about the fact he's about to shoot the scene. And he goes, okay, Mr. Bletch, and action. And Mr. Bletch begins to sort of dry retch like this. And he goes, okay, and Tanya, throw the lever. And Tanya throws this huge lever on her 44-gallon drum pump of vomit. And nothing happens. And Peter's like, more pressure, Tanya, more pressure. And Tanya throws the lever even further and still nothing's happening. Mr. Bletch is acting perfectly adequately, sort of dry retching in the middle of this golf course. And in desperation, Peter goes, full pressure, Tanya, full pressure. So Tanya pushes the lever fully over. And here's Mr. Bletch going like this, nothing's happening. And suddenly Mr. Bletch falls over. His head pops off and this huge amount of vomit comes spilling out onto the golf course. And what had happened on the first lever throw, the pressure had whiplashed the pipe out of the mouth of the puppet into the head of the puppet. But this vigilant little puppeteer just kept puppeteering as the vomit rose up his body. And more pressure, Tanya, more pressure. And he's going, oh, I've got to do my job well. I've got to do my job well. I've got to do my job well. And it comes up here and then finally, got to do my job well. And it's up to here. And then finally, he goes, bugger, I'm just going to get out of it. And he falls over. And I stood there and it was one of those epiphanies in your life. And I thought, there's my wife, and this is the situation, and here we are, and this has got to be the career for us. And with this amazing guy who will ask you to spray vomit over New Wellington's best golf course. So we went on and did Brain Dead, and then on to Heavenly Creatures. And it was actually on Heavenly Creatures that we bought our first computer. It had been leased by the production to do the small amount of effects work that you saw in the film. But at the end of it, we realized that one computer could change the direction that our film effects work was going in New Zealand. And so, unfortunately, we couldn't afford it. It was nearly $1 million for this one computer. It's got less power than the average cell phone today. But it was the first Silicon Graphics computer in the Southern Hemisphere. And so we all got together, Jamie Selkirk, Peter's editor, Peter Jackson, myself, and Tanya, my wife, and we all agreed that we would form a company called Weta and purchase this one computer, and that's indeed what we went on and did. And now that one computer has been replaced. I think we've got 450 workstations at the moment with a team at the workshop of about 500 people in the digital effects department trying to get King Kong finished while I stand here in the cold light of day. It's manic back home at the moment. And then on to Jack Brown Genius, The Frighteners, Hercules and Xena, Forgotten Silver, for those of you that may have had the pleasure of seeing that crazy thing. And then 9 years ago, we started on King Kong, and we had a wonderful 6 months working away on this movie. But very, very sadly, it fell over 6 months into the project. It was desperate for us. We'd finally got onto this big American movie. We'd been talking about it for years, and it fell over. We were desperately upset about it, and it put us in some pretty serious concerns with our company, because we had contracted our crew for 2 years onto the project. But in hindsight, it's arguably the best thing that could have ever have happened. Firstly, I think it's fair to say that we were ill-equipped to actually make King Kong at that time, just too inexperienced. But secondly, please come on in, Gondorian. Whew. But secondly as well, we were also, it's arguable that Lord of the Rings would never have been made if we had continued on with King Kong. So thankfully it did ultimately fall over. And we went back to Hercules and Xena. Our digital effects department went on to Contact with Bob Zemeckis, which saved us and allowed us to continue on in business. And Peter went off around the world to try and find another project, and what he came back with ultimately was Lord of the Rings. And, of course, the rest is now history. We started a 7.5-year journey on that film. There's many reasons why we've been able to do what we have in New Zealand. You know, obviously our countries are very similar, and to find ourselves in a place where we've been able to build a facility and get together a group of people that can achieve this body of work is quite an accomplishment, and is in a country as isolated and as far away from the American film industry as Wellington, New Zealand is. But one of the things I say to our crew, why shouldn't it be us? Why shouldn't we actually give it a go? Of the 158 people we hired on the Lord of the Rings, only 38 had ever worked on a film or television show before. So of the 158, over 120 people were coming to it with no skills at all in the various fields that we required. but by empowering these young people into the self-belief that they could actually go on this journey for 7.5 years, be part of a team to make the 48,000 separate props that we had to make in the workshop, we could actually achieve, and they could accomplish more than they expected of themselves. And in turn, ultimately, the proof is in the work. These people lifted their game, rose to the occasion, and were challenged by the opportunity to do the film. Since finishing Lord of the Rings, we've been pretty busy. We've worked on a variety of projects. We've done bits and pieces on Master and Commander, Peter Pan, Last Samurai, Perfect Strangers, Hellboy, Van Helsing, iRobot, some development work on Evangelion, Kingdom of Heaven, Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, Arctic Journal, King Kong and Legends of Zorro. And just on Monday, we're probably going to be starting on Halo, so it's all pretty frantic. Now, the issue for us, though, is that we're a service business, like possibly so many people in the audience. We ride the highs and lows of the world economy that ultimately drives the film industry. So in turn, we've tried very hard to expand our business and find other ways that we can develop business opportunities that allow our technicians to stay and work. An effects workshop will normally lay off their staff to the last person every time a job comes to an end. But that doesn't give a technician the opportunity to have a career in the industry. They can only have a job-by-job opportunity. So we've tried very hard to stabilize the workshop so that people can stay on year in and year out. To that end, we've developed a little business called Weta Collectibles, which I'm proudly wearing here, and we've done the Muppets, the Lord of the Rings, Narnia, Kong, and Legends of Zorro as collectible sculptures that our team sculpt. And then we have also started up our own children's television production company, and our first show out of the gate is called Jane and the Dragon. There's very, very little television that's aimed at empowering young girls to act above their station. And in the story of Jane, this young medieval girl's been born into the court of a king, and in turn will become a lady-in-waiting, but she wants to become a knight. And through the friendship that she has with a big green dragon, she ultimately achieves that and then changes her life around her. And the big issue, as some of you may well be aware, very little television, animated children's television, is made in developed world countries anymore. It mostly goes to Korea, China, India, and so on. The problem is that the cost of animators are so extreme now because, of course, they can go and work... Sorry. They can go and work at Pixar or Weta or whatever. So we had to turn the television model on its head to allow us to make the show that we're ultimately making. We're using motion capture as our primary animation tool, but also one of the young guys in the workshop said to themselves, what skills does a young New Zealander have, a cost-effective young New Zealander, that could assist us in the creation of this show? And it's this skill. It's the dexterity in these two thumbs required to play a Game Boy machine. And what we've actually achieved now is the ability to animate our characters to the equivalent level of Gollum, utilizing the two thumbs on a wireless interface off a Game Boy. And it's allowed us to make very cost-effective television in New Zealand, which is cool. We've also developed another company called Weta Tenzan Chainmail, where we've commercialised the production of the chainmail that we made on Lord of the Rings. And we've since done Kingdom of Heaven, Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, and the Da Vinci Code with this material, which is very exciting. But one of the most exciting things, of course, is the chance to do some development work on Evangelion. So... about 2 years ago, a company called ADV, run by a guy called John Ledford, who is one of the largest distributors of manga and anime in the American country, approached us with the opportunity to do some development work to take Neo Genesis Evangelion into the live action feature film format. Very sadly, 6 months into it, it hit a rocky path and literally fell off the planet for us. We hung on and hung on, hoping it was going to come online, but sadly, it wasn't to be. And so we moved on to other things and went on and did Zorro and King Kong and Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe and thought that that was it. But about 4 months ago, we were at Comic-Con in San Diego with our collectibles business, and the producer that we'd worked with came wandering past, and we stopped and we said, "Hey, just tell us for a moment, what on earth happened with Evangelion?" And he said, well, that's funny you should say that. I was hoping to catch up and I was hoping to talk. Let's go to the bar and have a chat." So we went up the road, sat down in this cafe, in this bar, and just as my backside touched the chair, this guy sitting having his lunch at the next table sort of glanced over, recognized me, turned and said, "So what's happening on Evangelion?" Just as you did as I walked in, and it was almost fate. And I turned to this producer, I said, see? And today, even though we've spent 7.5 years on Lord of the Rings, there's 3 major films out there. It's arguable that they've been a filmic phenomenon. We still get 25 Evangelion emails to every 1 Lord of the Rings email that we get through the workshop. So it made me appreciate it all the more. So 2 weeks ago, it culminated in myself and Andrew, our business manager, flying to Tokyo for the first time. And we went with John Ledford from ADV and went to Gainax, the original creators of Evangelion, and basically went and pitched them to buy their and try and find an endorsement from them that they felt comfortable with us continuing to develop this project. And that's indeed what we got from them. And it was an amazing meeting because they're renowned for controlling their property with great care and caution. But due to our previous work, due to the very considerable pitch that I made them, I'd done a 6.5-minute piece to camera with the work that we've been developing. We've continued on and just continued to develop Evangelion in our own time, so I was able to show them that. And it was a really great thing. We really got an endorsement from them. Then we got to look around their studios, and at the end of the tour, who should be sitting in the corner having his lunch watching the dailies from the day before's animation but the director of Evangelion, which was just beyond belief for me. And it turned out, just through conversation with him, that he was a steam train enthusiast, which is what I am myself. I drive a miniature steam locomotive as my hobby. And so we just bonded brilliantly. And so by the time we left the building, we're patting each other on the back, and this is going to happen. And then we spent the next few days going around the city talking to different potential financiers. So our fingers are crossed that in the coming months we may hear more and maybe this project can get off the ground. But we'll obviously it's a long, long road to go from getting the first inception of a project to actually delivering it on film. But we are very, very hopeful that it may happen. And if it fell in behind as we come off Halo, it would be a really lovely thing. I don't think there's ever been a project I've wanted to do more than Evangelion, other than Lord of the Rings. So it's a wonderful opportunity. Now, on that note, is there anything I can, any questions I can answer? Any burning? Yep, the question is Halo. That I actually know very little about it to this point. Really only what's been in the press. But we are in discussions about the opportunity to work on Halo, which is exciting. So, Anyone else with any questions? Otherwise, I'll just keep blabbing along. So. Yeah, it's the television show's been bought by a number of broadcasters around the world, and very thankfully has been bought by an Australian broadcaster. I'm not sure which one, unfortunately. I can't remember. But we're really thrilled that it's going to play here. It's very exciting for me because being a service provider, we're really, really thrilled by the projects we've got to work on. There's no question that we've been blessed by the career that we've ultimately had a chance to do. But at the end of the day, we're invited to the director's party at the director's house. And you can drink all you like and eat chocolate cake, but it's still the director's house. So you've got to abide by their rules. The TV show is our house, and we've invited the crew along to come and hang out and enjoy times with us. And it's just such a lovely treat to think that we've put our creative necks on the line, our financial necks on the line, that it's all up to us whether this thing works or doesn't work. And being challenged to such a degree with the technology, it's one thing to have Weta Digital making King Kong-style movies, but of course, trying to do cost-effective television at really cut-rate prices is a huge challenge. But Tanya and I have been avid collectors of children's television for as long as I can remember. I'm a big fan of Cosgrove Hall and McKinnon and Saunders, their stop animation company in Manchester. And over the years, I've gone back and visited them again and again, just soaking up what an amazing craft that they're in. So finally, we had a chance to develop our own show, and that's indeed what we've gone on and done. I should probably show a bit more of this stuff on here. I'll show you this little trailer, that this piece to camera that I've done for Weta Tens and Chainmail. This sort of shows you, this. People think that Weta must be some sort of highly sophisticated entity these days, but it's all pretty... even the advertising and the promotion that we do is still done by ourselves, very low rent in a lot of ways, and this is a good example of that. Do you mind playing that?
Hi there, I'm Richard Taylor from Weta Workshop. On The Lord of the Rings, we had the great pleasure of looking after the miniatures, creatures, special makeup effects, weapons, and armour. Over the length of LOTR, we produced hundreds of suits of chainmail using a unique process developed here at the Weta Workshop. And on completion of the trilogy, we decided that there was a need by film and television costumers around the world for a visually stunning and actor-friendly chainmail product. One that was an exact facsimile of the real thing, but at a third of the weight. Drawing on our specialist skills of chainmail experts at Weta Workshop, we are able to pattern up any size and style of garment through to an entire army's worth of chainmail. Our product can be zinc plated, or as a more lightweight and noise-reduced version, a painted surface finish in any metallic or specialist colour that looks perfect on screen. Our product has been proven in the field, having been utilised extensively on The Lord of the Rings, Kingdom of Heaven and The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe. Weta Tens and Chainmail is particularly suitable for use on set, as it's easy to clean and maintain, and if any damage occurs, repairs are simple to make. We can create steel chainmail from the finest weave possible up to any ring size required. Weta Tens and Chainmail can bring a technically superior, lightweight and very beautiful solution to historical costuming. If you require further information about Weta Tens and Chainmail, please do get in touch. We look forward to providing chainmail for your film, television, theatrical, and reenactment needs.
So it's lovely to think out of a mad a mad scheme on Lord of the Rings where our technicians assembled all of this chainmail that we would actually get to a point that we'd actually be able to create a little business and ultimately see it through to some sort of commercial opportunity for those technicians. The last thing that we've developed over this last year, a number of you would have met Daniel Falconer, one of our senior designers. Woohoo! We should be over there. Is that Daniel has taken on the challenges of creating a company we've called Weta Publishing. And we've just completed our first book that's just gone to be printed. It's a story of the fauna and flora of Skull Island, as if Skull Island really exists as a place. And the designers have spent a year illustrating and designing into this world. So I was going to play the Lord of the Rings trailers, but you've ended up with the same one again, unfortunately. So anyway, is there any other questions I can answer, please? Yes. Who is directing Halo? No, there's no director chosen as yet, yeah, that I'm aware of. So potential directors, no, there's been no conversation about it yet. Peter's executive producing it, yeah, which is a great thing. But sadly, no, I don't know that. So we're hanging on with bated breath as well. So, yes. Is there any prospect of Weta doing The Hobbit? Nothing would please us more than getting to work on The Hobbit. The Hobbit is a really complex one because it's tied up in very, very complex legal issues between a number of different people that own the rights to it. And they have to therefore unravel all of that for it allowed to be made. But we dream of the day that we may get invited to work on it. Nothing would please me more than going back to Middle Earth or visiting New Tokyo. So maybe one or the other. So any other questions, please? Yes. Yes, it's still made by hand. We used to cut it off the end of a piece of alkathene pipe using a little automated machine that we invented, and then the guys hand-assembled it, gluing it all together. It took 3.5 years to hand-assemble 12.5 million rings for two guys. But now what we do is we actually injection mould it, and it's got a little mechanical clip that makes it much, much quicker to assemble. Then we use methyl ethyl ketone to seal the joins. Then we bake it for 2 days in an oven and then paint it. And that creates the product. It's 4 times lighter than the real thing and very, very strong. So, yes. Any plans for a tour of Weta? It's an interesting one. We get asked a lot. We have 2 busloads of people come to the front gate every week. Big busloads. Did you come up to our conference room? Oh, it's a shame. If people come upstairs and knock, they can look around the foyer and through our conference room. The problem is we would love to have people come through, and we used to do tours for school kids and anyone that came to the door. But today, the confidentiality clauses are so crushing and so litigious that it makes it very dangerous for us to take people through. But normally, the red carpet tours, as they come down Park Road, call me on my cell phone, and if I'm not too frantic, we go out and meet the bus and invite them into the workshop, and they can see what we have... what we are able to show at any particular time, but it would be a nice thing. Joe Bloggs off the street can certainly come and knock on the door and try their luck, yeah. It usually is good. We had a guy with his 2 young children from Australia. They'd flown over and gone around all the Lord of the Rings sites, and their last day was in Wellington. This was just last week. And they knocked on the door, and just because we're right at the end of the Kong, before we start something else, we've got a week of non-confidentiality. And so one of our production assistants took them for an hour and a half tour through the workshop, and they were fighting with Legolas's knives. knives and firing arrows. And oh man, it was amazing. These two children were just so excited. So it was really, and we just got a really beautiful letter back from them, which was nice. So yes. Would we ever produce a book about Weta? In fact, I have made two or three false starts on making a book about Weta. Not because it's an interesting one, because we've prided ourselves on being pretty humble about our journey over the years, and I've got no great desire to talk about what we've done as such. But the book that I've been developing turns to each of the technicians and explores their stories, because almost all of them have a really unique story. Only two of the people in the workshop have any formal training at what they do. They've all just learnt at home, working in their bedrooms. Most of them are from rural New Zealand. And in turn, it makes for really compelling reading for young people throughout the world that have a dream to do something. So yes, one day I hope we do actually, I get off my backside and get it finished, but it's just a hell of a project. And every time you're just about to commit to it, you start a new film and go, well, you want the book to have that in it, so you stop again. And so I think I'm almost out of time, so if I can answer any more questions. So... yes, you have to yell a little bit. What do I look for in an employee? That's probably the best question. We don't hire for talent. There's a misconception that you must have to be incredibly talented. If I go back to the statistic of the 158 people, only 38 had ever worked on a film or TV show before. That meant that the other 120 came to us without portfolios, without any physical sign of hand skills. We look in order for passion, enthusiasm, and tenacity. Now that may sound a little bit corny, but as you all know, you would rather work with someone that's good at their job and incredibly great to get along with than a genius that's a complete asshole. And simply put, and in a community such as Weta, where you're working side by side through the most hothouse of work under incredible pressure, you do not want to have people that ripple the water because they're egotistical or self-centered or overreaching or trying to prove their own work. So what we look for is people that have an intense passion for life, not necessarily even for filmmaking. They just want to get out there and do stuff. Then enthusiasm, just a desire to crack along. And then tenacity. If you don't have the ability to stick with something, 12.5 million links of chain over 3.5 years, that's tenacity. You've got to be able to stick with it, because there's also a misconception that if you come to Weta, you must be going to be doing lots and lots of highly creative things. Lord of the Rings was a factory. Making 48,000 separate props for Lord of the Rings was a factory. My good friend Warren sits here in this row. Warren came and worked with us for 2.5 years. And for 2.5 years, Warren did almost nothing else than make up different batches of slime for the birthing Irukai, for the web that Shelob wove. And it just, you get into this rhythm of producing stuff. Now, a young person, as all of you have experienced, can get lost in the minutiae of the job. All they can see is the pop rivet. But the challenge for me at Weta is to lift them out of the minutiae and get them to appreciate, no matter how fine the thread that they weave into the tapestry, if they don't weave it properly, the tapestry will be threadbare. They have to weave it with the greatest care, and every one of those weaves are as important as the next. So no matter how small the task, these pop rivets on this chap's outfit, one guy put in 3.5 million pop rivets over 5 years into the Gondorian and Irukai armor. That's a hell of an ask for a 17-year-old to come onto a job and at 22 still be putting the same pop rivets in. But he did it because he appreciated that he was weaving a very fine thread into that work. And if you can lift someone to that appreciation, you've got them. I think I'm nearly done. So, look, thank you very much. Lovely to talk to you all, and cheers.
You've been listening to the Supernova podcast presented by Joffrey Street Productions. Music by Yunyu. Visit www.yunyu.com.au. Hosted by Cool Shite on the Tube crew, visit www.coolshite.net. Check out Supernova at www.supanova.com.au. For questions, comments and inquiries, email supernova@coolshite.net.